Hello, welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kavita Afwai. Official figures of European Union show Eurozone unemployment rate has hit an all-time high of almost 11%. The figure reported for January is the highest level since the introduction of the common currency back in 1999. The rate is 23.3% in Spain, almost 21% in Greece, 15% in Portugal, also 15% in Ireland, and almost 7.5% in Germany. Now, that means close to 17 million people were out of work in the first months of 2012, and that's on paper. Well, in this edition of the News Analysis, we will take a closer look at the unemployment rate, especially amongst different age groups, and we will examine whether the Eurozone is doomed and how it is casting a shadow over the world economy and its recovery.
The jobless rate in the 17-member Eurobloc rose to 10.7% in January, with the youth unemployment standing at 21.6%. Job losses have left an additional 185,000 people out of work. The number of jobs lost is reported to be 0.3% more than initial estimates, showing the severity of the economic situation in some Eurozone countries.
The problem is that if you carry on cutting in a downward economic trend, you can end up just making the situation worse. So there's no obvious end in sight to this in the near term.
Spain's job losses accelerated in the fourth quarter of last year and hit a new high of nearly 23%, with over 5 million people out of work. The Greeks have also been struggling with similar economic hardship as Athens agreed to harsh austerity measures that include job cuts to secure a bailout. The cuts have pushed the jobless rate to a record 20.9%. More job losses are expected as Athens plans to close institutions and slash more jobs this year to avert a default. While many other Eurozone countries struggle with similar problems, the situation for the Eurobloc's three largest economies seems no better, as job losses are pushing more people into poverty. Germany, the bloc's largest economy, is grappling with a 7.4% unemployment rate. France's jobless rate rose to 9.8% in the fourth quarter of last year, and the Italian unemployment rate has climbed to 9.2%.
The social implications of very high unemployment, coupled with an erosion of real wages, and in many countries wages have been relatively flat, or rising only modestly.
Ratings agencies have downgraded several Eurozone countries as a result and put others on credit watch. But they have concluded that a comprehensive solution to the Eurozone crisis is beyond reach under the current circumstances. In a summit late last year, EU leaders except Britain only agreed to introduce tougher budget rules to save the Eurozone. This while experts have warned that the situation in the Eurobloc would continue to worsen and spread to other non-Euro economies unless European leaders take proper measures to stabilize credit markets, boost growth, and create jobs.
Let's find out how bad the situation in the Eurozone is and if there are any hopes for it. Let me introduce our guest, Robert Uhls. He's an economic expert. He joins us from London. We have journalists and broadcaster Max Kaiser joining us from Paris. And from the Foreign Policy and Focus, Ian Williams joins us from New York. Gentlemen, welcome. Max, over to you first. Does unemployment at almost 11%, which is the highest since the introduction of the common currency, mean, well, one of the meanings that the 17-member Eurozone is in a recession, and that's just one of the consequences now?
Well, the employment picture is bad pretty much everywhere, and the reason is common amongst all these various countries. Money is being printed, but it doesn't flow to wages or savings and pensions. It flows to asset price inflation and to bonuses for corrupt bankers. And this has been going on for a number of years now, and there's nothing in the pipeline that's going to stop this trend. There seems to be very little recourse for anyone to push back against this phenomenon of a what I would call a sterilized inflation. That is to say that inflation only for assets that are owned by the bankers, but everyone else is suffering massive deflation, wages falling apart, and no return on savings or pensions.
And what about factory output, which just reported that the manufacturing output has actually contracted? It has decreased. Doesn't that also have a bearing on the unemployment, as we're seeing the highest at almost 11% across the Eurozone?
Well, factory output is an anachronism. The economy runs on financial engineering now, and currency trading and speculation financed by ultra-low rates, near 0% interest rates. And it's not the economy is not run on manufacturing. It's run on financial speculation. And whenever any one of these guys makes a losing bet, of course, then they print more money. They get bailed out. The assets that they own go up in price. But it continues and widens the wealth and income gaps and is flaming the global unrest.
Okay. Robert Rules, let's look at the unemployment. Depending on how you want to look at it, it's somewhat higher, though, if we want to look at the age group at some of these countries. For example, in Greece and in Italy, amongst the youth, it's creeping its way to almost 30%. So how does that reflect on any future prospects for growth in these countries as examples, and of course other Eurozone countries?
Well, it bodes very bad for the future. And of course, we must remember the situation in Spain, where youth unemployment is now at 50%. They're usually the most productive generation of the population, yet they are out of work. There is very much a situation where there's just little hope within those countries such as Greece, Italy, Spain and Portugal because of the massive problems of youth unemployment. So really the future is looking very dark for those countries as a result of the austerity measures that are being forced upon them by the European Union. And your previous guest, Max, who was talking about the bailouts of the banks, and what's happening is the European Central Bank has recently now given cheap loans to financial institutions throughout the European Union, particularly the Eurozone, which now total 1,000 billion euros. But that money has gone primarily to German banks. It's not going to the people, it's not going to the unemployed, it's not going to creating wealth and jobs within the countries such as Greece and Spain, which are really suffering as a result of being in the euro. It's just going out to bailing out the financial institutions rather than generating economic growth. And that is a severe problem, and it shows that there's very little future in those countries while they're stuck in the euro and having these austerity measures forced upon them.
So it's going to the banks, and you mentioned Germany. Why isn't it trickling down? What is the problem here? Where is the disconnect? I mean, are they just waiting to see if financial markets are going to rebound?
Well, there is the fear that if Greece fully defaults, it's already in a selective default, that this would create economic problems because many banks and financial institutions, particularly in France and Germany, have irresponsibly loaned money to countries such as Greece, Italy, Spain and Portugal and, of course, Ireland. So they're worried that those banks will go bust. But, of course, the answer is that to the economic problems is that the countries exit the euro, stop having the austerity forced upon them, get a competitive currency valued at the right level and where their economies can begin to grow. At the moment, they're just having cutbacks. In Greece, pensions are being cut. The health care is being cut. Wages are being cut. Wages have reduced since this crisis began by as much as 25% in real terms. That is showing that there's a great deal of economic harm which is being taken on board by the ordinary citizens, and particularly the young people who are now out of work, and that just shows that those countries have very little future whilst these policies are being basically forced upon them to protect financial institutions based in France and Germany that have good links with the European Central Bank.
Well, you talked about austerity. Ian Williams, and let's look at these job losses, how they're pushing people into the corner, including, of course, austerities. Many are living in poverty. There were violent clashes in Spain on Thursday between students and police, something that had happened a week earlier, too, and prior to that in London and Athens. What are the social implications of this situation, which seems basically defying all these solutions, whether it's cash injections or otherwise?
Well, the big social problem is how long it carries on. There comes a time when people become almost unemployable. You know, work is a sort of difficult habit to get into. Skills are difficult to acquire. And these young people are at an age when they should be acquiring skills, professional aptitudes, that should be getting employed in the economy. And they're getting out of the habit of simple work, let alone the skills training. And the other part of this complex is that it's not so much the euro was wrong, but its direction. The idea that European Central Bank's main idea is to control inflation is totally counterproductive at a time like this. For example, as your previous people have just mentioned, the European Central Bank has lent banks over $1 trillion at 1% with no conditions whatsoever on what the banks do with it. Some of those banks have actually lent that money back to the European Central Bank and are making profits on the interests. They're lending it to governments. But there are no conditions that they lend it to productive investment, that they lend it
to
governments for infrastructure.
Shouldn't there be oversight on that?
Governments are paying full interest rates.
Shouldn't there be oversight on that?
There should be oversight, but that would be government interference in the economy, and that's a complete no-no for the central bankers. They don't want government interference in what they're doing. And you know, obviously, if $1 trillion is being given to banks, there should be conditions. They should show that they've used that money responsibly, that they've lent it, that they put it into circulation. But once again, as your previous interlocutors pointed out, this money isn't going into the real economy. Because this isn't something where you can just do one thing. You have to do a lot of things together. You have to get money circulating in the economy. You have to get people buying things. You have to get people making things. And these things aren't linear, they're circular. Money moving is active in the economy. Money sitting in bankers' coffers is not real money in terms of economic boost.
Well, let's talk about something that I didn't want to really bring into the picture, but the figure was so astounding. Max Kaiser, talk about money being in circulation. Senior European Commission official has said that the EU loses some 600 million euros to suspected fraud every year. That's the European Commissioner, Director General for Justice, François Lebel. How is that possible for the EU to lose 600 million euros to fraud every year?
Well, that's not that hard to do, really. When you consider, for example, the U.S., when they invaded Iraq, they lost $8 billion in cash that they were trying to fly in on a military transport somehow went missing. But the level of graft and larceny in the IMF, the World Bank, Deutsche Bank, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, to name a few, is enormous. When you pay out $140 billion in bonuses, as they do on Wall Street or at the various banks in Europe, that's just the tip of a multi-hundred billion, multi-trillion dollar money laundering scam that goes on. As your previous guest just mentioned, the central banks lend money out to these banks at 1%. They in turn reinvest it with the central bank at 3%. So they make 2% carry. It's a carry trade to do absolutely nothing. They're not incentivized to put that money to work in the economy. They're making free 2%. On their cash or more. And when you have that kind of moral hazard, when you have that kind of sloppiness in the central banking system to the tune of many trillions of dollars, of course you're going to lose a few hundred million there and a few hundred million there. You know, it adds up after a time. But there's no accountability. There's no regulatory authority of any note, of any, there's no deterrent to committing financial fraud. Look at MF Global in the United States. J.B. Dimon and J.P. Morgan have been caught stealing $1 billion from customers. It's now not refuted, fully documented. There's no investigation. They simply say, well, you know, you win some, you lose some. Tough luck. And of course, J.P. Morgan has recently said that no account with less than $100,000, they have no interest in those accounts because they don't make any money on them. And they're introducing a new credit card for accounts with $25 million and above, where they get to trade on the Forex market without being raped every day by Jamie Dimon. That's the benefit. Who pays for that? Everybody else, through austerity measures. So we very much have a feudalism is alive and well. You've got a few feudal lords, like the bankers in Europe and on Wall Street, and everyone else is basically an indentured servant. There's over $1 trillion in bad student loans in America. That's the next bubble to pop. That's another huge wave of youth about to be thrown into the street with $1 trillion of debt and told, go to a concentration camp and die, you pig. We don't care about you. You know, that's the message from Jamie Dimon today and Chase Manhattan. Go die in a concentration camp. The biggest growth industry in America is the prison industry. Why is that? It's the only growing industry in America is the prison industry. That's the most profitable industry, and the bankers are aiding and abetting the entrapment of folks with forcing debt down their throat and forcing them to go to prison, and that's the economy.
And basically, Robert Olds, based on the scenario that Max has set out with another big bubble to burst, that's the student loans out of the United States, Eurozone, and countries in Europe, obviously, to be affected. When we look at Greece, though, that's just one of the countries. What is it that they want from Greece when it seems all analysts are pointing out to us default, inevitable default? I mean, looking at this desired debt ratio that they have, that they wanted to basically be extended to the year 2020, that's looking down the road 8 years. I mean, that's not even possible for Germany, is it? So aren't we looking inevitably, as in terms of Greece, as a default? And then, of course, how that's going to affect the Eurozone, and then what countries are going to come after that? Spain and Italy, for example.
Yeah, the situation in Greece is there's already a selective default, a partial default. But the political leaders of the European Union that are pressuring Greece into austerity cuts and greater cuts to their public services whilst raising taxes on their citizens is primarily to keep the euro, which is a political project, together. That's the European Union's single currency. And, of course, they want to keep the European Union intact and protect their financial markets and have a great deal of Greek money transferred to the banks and the financial institutions that had loaned the money. Greece has been receiving bailouts from various countries within the European Union, but 70% of that goes straight back to the banks that have irresponsibly loaned them money, which Greece cannot afford to repay. And Greece is suffering a great deal of economic harm, all to protect the political project of the euro, because many analysts now think it's very sensible that Greece exits the eurozone. And, of course, another aspect is that they want to keep the funds being transferred from the Greek taxpayer to the financial institutions, primarily in France and Germany, that have close links to the European Central Bank and have also been benefiting from the loans at very preferential rates that we've discussed. That's the main aim. And the main aim is not to keep jobs, not to reduce unemployment, not to stimulate economic growth. It's just to continue that transfer of wealth from Southern Europe to banks in Northern Europe.
Ian Williams, of course, we can't talk about this without mentioning oil. Do you think that the Eurozone leaders are regretting that decision by the U.S.? They were the ones that were leading these sanctions. Not that Iran was the only factor behind this, but Iran's decision to stop oil purchases to some European countries, that obviously has an impact on products. Inflation is creeping up. We have factory manufacturing, as I mentioned, to decrease. So do you think they're regretting that decision now?
Well, I don't know whether they're regretting it or not. They should have done it. It was a very regrettable decision to begin with. It was quite obvious that any interference in the oil supply is going to produce an increase in spot oil prices, and those countries that can least afford it in Southern Europe are amongst those most directly affected. Even in the US, prices shoot up. There's a very naive assumption in the American Congress that all you have to do is to drill in Alberta oil sands, and that will bring the gas in the tank back down. It doesn't happen that way. Global oil prices are fixed globally, and they were bound to go up. The whole pressure on Iran is totally counterproductive for the US economy. But once again, we don't have rational people, we have ideologues. In Europe, we have ideologues who are fixed in the 1930s and think that stopping inflation is the be-all and end-all of economic policy. In America, we have that plus ideologues who think that appeasing Israel at all costs and attacking Iran is paramount above actual economic policy and common sense. What we're seeing is what happens when lobbies are let loose on foreign policy and economic policy. There is no, how should we say, joined up thinking in either continent at the moment, which is very, very worrying indeed.
Max Keiser, we know that this has been said also, that this is not a situation where you can get a quick fix regarding the Eurozone. Combined, I think 17 countries have on paper $10 trillion in debt. So if we can talk in terms of the general 17-nation bloc Eurozone, what is going to lead to a path that we can see some improvements in terms of the respective economies? Is what Angela Merkel suggested in terms of having what an official at every governmental financial institution in each country the solution to go on her a way of tackling this?
No. You know, I mean, the problem is that a country like Greece cannot defend itself against financial terrorists like Goldman Sachs. So they have no way to defend themselves, and that's a problem. You know, so much of the crime has been committed from the rating agencies who have come in with ratings that were bought and paid for by the banks and the hedge funds that were selling short these countries like Greece as a way to facilitate the destruction of Greece. I would suggest that Greece open their own rating agency and they start putting a rating out on U.S. Treasury debt or British Treasury debt or Israeli Treasury debt and call it what it is, junk. American is triple C rated, and they should get the focus of the global attention on the junk status of a U.S. Treasury bond, because the Greek Treasury paper is backed up by real assets. They've got hundreds of billions of dollars worth of assets. Those assets are being stolen by foreign bankers for pennies. The Troika, of course, the three members of the ECB, IMF, EU, they just got Greece to sign off 111 tons of gold. Okay, that's one of their assets. Greece should not be forced to disgorge their gold reserves. The Germans already stole a lot of their gold during World War II. Now the Germans are going to steal the rest of their gold. So there has to be a way to fight back for Greece. You know, they can create their own rating agency, number one. Number two, they should arrest Goldman Sachs bankers immediately, take them to The Hague, try them for human rights abuses, and hang them. I think that would be a too good for a Goldman Sachs. And they should then go right down the list, find these bankers, prosecute them. They're war criminals. They're human rights violators. They should be hung.
Robert Olds, Max does have a point there, doesn't he? I mean, in terms of what the Troika, as he mentioned, how they're going to reap the rewards, even though they're walking a very fragile line, in a matter of speaking, when they have almost complete control over the sovereignty of each of these nations, and Greece is the first stop with other countries to follow.
Yes, you're quite right. There's a sovereignty and democracy issue, and the Troika, the IMF, the ECB, and the other institutions of that make up the European Union own the assets of Greece. The assets of Greece are now not owned by the Greek people and that exist for the benefit of the Greeks. They're owned by these supranational institutions which operate without democratic accountability. That is in the bailout agreements. And really, there's a great deal of economic harm being done as a result of these institutions being unaccountable and undemocratic, even anti-democratic. To have a good economy, you need a government that will respond to the people's needs and manage the economy in their own people's best interests. At the moment, Greece is effectively run by the European Union, and the policies that are being forced upon it are not in the interests of the Greek people. That is what happens when democracy and sovereignty are taken away from a nation and given to unaccountable supranational institutions. So really, there's a democracy issue here, and too much power has been taken away from member states and given to the European Union. And really, that process needs to be unwound. And then, of course, we can have governments that will actually respond to their people's best interest, and that will be to get jobs and growth back in the economy.
Ian Williams, last question, quick response, 30 seconds or less. Is the Eurozone dragging the world economy and its recovery?
The Euro is, the European Central Bank is. The Eurozone, in the case of Germany, is doing quite well economically. It needs a rethinking. Merkel needs to go back and pretend she was like Kohl and treat Europe as though it were East Germany and take it over and put a lot of money into it. You can't have power without responsibility, and that's what Germany has at the moment. Power and no responsibility for the people in Southern Europe.
Okay, thank you. Ian Williams, Foreign Policy and Focus, thank you very much. Robert Ulz, who's an economic expert from London, thank you for your statements. And journalist and broadcaster Max Kaiser, thank you for your statements from Paris. And thank you, the viewer, for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. Any comments, suggestions, or a topic, do send it to us, newsroom@presstv.ir. From Mikhail Vefthavoy and the entire team here in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.